8 in the evening. From out of the south, like a dark insect crawling over a wrinkled blue tablecloth, a tired old cargo ship pushed her way through the Caribbean swells toward the entrance of Santiago Harbor on the Isle of Cuba. The exhaust from her single funnel drifted in a blue haze under an easterly breeze as the sun settled below the western horizon and became a ponderous orange ball magnified by the Earth's atmosphere. She was one of the last tramp steamers, a cargo ship that traveled the sea anonymously to the exotic and far-flung ports of the world. There were few left in operation. They did not follow a regular shipping route. Their schedules depended on the demands of their cargo and its owners, so their destinations changed from port to port. They coasted in, unloaded their freight, and sailed away like wraiths in the night. 2 miles from shore, a small boat slapped over the rolling sea, approached the ship, and swung around on a parallel course. The pilot closed on the rust-streaked hull as a boarding ladder was thrown down from an open hatch. The pilot, a man in his 50s with brown skin and thick gray hair, stared up at the ancient ship. Her black paint was faded and badly needed to be chipped away and repainted. Streams of rust flowed from every opening in the hull. The huge anchor, pulled tightly in its hawse hole, was completely covered by corrosion. The pilot read the letters, barely discernible on the upper bow. The weary old freighter was named Oregon. Jesus Morales shook his head in amazement. It was a miracle the ship hadn't been scrapped 20 years ago, he mused. She looked more like a derelict than a cargo carrier still in service. He wondered if the party bureaucrats in the Ministry of Transportation had any idea of the condition of the ship they had contracted to bring in a cargo of chemical fertilizer for the sugar and tobacco fields. He could not believe the ship had passed maritime insurance inspection. As the ship slowed almost to a dead stop, Morales stood at the railing, and the pilot boat's bumpers squeezed against the freighter's hull. Timing the crest of a wave as it lifted the boat, Morales leaped agilely from the wet deck onto the boarding ladder and climbed to the hatch. It was a function he performed as often as 10 times a day. A pair of crewmen were waiting beside the hatch and helped him up on the deck. The two were both burly-looking individuals, and they did not bother to smile in greeting. One simply pointed toward the ladder leading to the bridge. Then they turned and left Morales standing alone on the deck. Watching them walk away, Morales hoped that he'd never have to meet them in a dark alley. He paused before climbing the ladder and took a few moments to study the upper works of the ship. From his long experience and knowledge of ships, he judged her length at 560 feet with a 75-foot beam, probably a gross tonnage of around 11,000. 5 derricks, 2 behind the funnel and superstructure, and 3 on the forward deck, stood waiting to unload her cargo. He counted 6 holds with 12 hatches. In her prime, she would have been classed as an express cargo liner. He guessed that she'd been built and launched in the early 1960s. The flag on her stern was Iranian, not a registry Morales had seen very often. If the Oregon looked shabby from the waterline, she looked downright squalid from her main deck. Rust covered every piece of deck machinery from winches to chains, but the hardware at least appeared to be in usable condition. By comparison, the derricks looked as if they hadn't been operated in years. To add further insult, battered drums, tools, and what could only be described as junked equipment were scattered around the decks. In all his years as a harbor pilot, Morales had never seen a ship in such filthy condition. He climbed the ladder steps leading to the bridge, past bulkheads with flaking paint and portholes whose lenses were cracked and yellowed. Then he paused before finally swinging the door open. The interior of the vessel was as bad, if not worse. The wheelhouse was dirty with scars of cigarette burns on the counters and on what had once been a polished teak deck. Dead flies littered the window sills. The smell assaulted his nose. And then there was the captain. Morales was greeted by a great slob of a man with an immense stomach that sagged over his belt line. The face was scarred and the nose so badly broken it slanted toward the left cheek. The thick black hair was plastered back with some kind of greasy cream, and his beard was scruffy and stringy. The captain was a cacophony of colors. His eyes were red and his teeth yellow-brown, while his arms were covered with blue tattoos. A grimy yachtsman's cap sat perched on the back of his head, and he wore dingy coveralls. The tropical heat and the humidity on the non-air-conditioned bridge made it obvious to Morales that the man had not bathed for at least a month. Any dog worth his salt would have tried to bury the man. He extended his sweaty hand to Morales and spoke in English. "Glad to see you. I'm Captain Jed Smith." "Jesus Morales, pilot for the harbor office of Santiago." Morales felt uncomfortable. Smith spoke English with an American accent, not what he'd expected on a ship of Iranian registry. Smith handed him a packet of papers. "Here's our registration and cargo manifest." Morales merely cast a brief glance at the documents. Officials on the docks would study them more closely. His only concern was that the ship had permission to enter the port. He handed back the packet and said, "Shall we proceed?" Smith waved a hand toward a wooden helm that somehow seemed terribly old-fashioned for a ship built in the 60s. "She's all yours, Senor Morales. What dock do you want us to moor at?" "There are no docks available until Thursday. You will have to anchor in the middle of the harbor until then." "That's 4 days from now. We have a schedule to meet. We can't sit around for 4 days waiting to unload our cargo." Morales shrugged. "I have no control over the harbor master. Besides, the docks are full with ships unloading new farm machinery and automobiles. Now that the embargo has been lifted, these have priority over your cargo." Smith threw up his hands. "All right, I guess it's not the first time we had to twiddle our thumbs waiting to unload." He gave a broad, rotten-tooth grin. "I guess me and my crew will just have to come ashore and make friends with your Cuban women."